Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It's March the 2nd, which is Rosh Chodesh Adar Beis. We are in Parashas Mishpatim, page 442, Pasuk Yud Beis, verse 12. The Torah just described to us some of what happened at Har Sinai with the giving of the Torah. And now the Torah is going to describe to us the next thing, which is, of course, that Moshe is going to go up the mountain for 40 days. We already saw in Parshas Yisro, we had the Aseres HaDibros, the Ten Commandments, and here we had another aspect of the Ten Commandments, with who was on the mountain. We had that Moshe and Aaron and Nadav and Avihu and the 70 elders were all on the mountain in different places. And when that ended, then we know that Moshe went up for 40 days to get the rest of the Torah.
Yeah.
And to get the tablets, to get the Luchos. So here we have that description. This part was not mentioned in Parshas Yisro. This is mentioned here for the first time. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Hashem says to Moshe, Alei Eli Hahara, come up to me to the mountain, Vehayesham, and be there. And I will give you the tablets of stone, the Torah, the mitzvah, and the Torah, and the commandment, that I have written some to teach them or to show them. How do they translate it? They translate it to teach. Okay. Moshe got up, and Yehoshua his servant. And Moshe went up to the mountain of Hashem. Velazekinim Amar, and to the elders he had said, before he left the camp, Shvu lanu vazeh, stay for us in this, which means stay here. How do they translate it here? They say, wait for us here. Okay. Ad asher nashuv aleichem, until we return to you. V'hine Aaron v'chori machem, behold Aaron and Chura with you, Miva'al divarim, whoever has anything, any issue, Yigash Alehem should get close to them. They see here a grievance. They should approach them. Vayal Moshe El Hahar, Moshe went up to the mountain. Vayachas Ha'anon El Sahar, and the mountain, and the crowd covered the mountain. Vayishkon Kavod Hashem Al Har Sinai, and the presence of Hashem dwelled, the honor of Hashem dwelled on Har Sinai. Vayachaseu Ha'anon Sheish HaSeolim, and the cloud covered it for 6 days. Called to Moshe on the seventh day, from inside the cloud. And the appearance of the honor of Hashem was like a burning fire, like a consuming fire on top of the mountain, to the eyes of the Jewish people. Moshe came inside the cloud, and he went up to the mountain. And Moshe was on the mountain 40 days, Ba'abayim Laila, and 40 nights. These 40 days and 40 nights are going to end on Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, on the 17th day of Tammuz, when Moshe will finally come down from the mountain and he will discover the golden calf. Okay. So this description seems to be all about Moshe going up for those 40 days. It seems that the receiving of the Torah had two parts to it. It had the revelation of Hashem on the sixth or seventh day of Sivan, during which the Ten Commandments were said. We Jews wanted to hear all Ten Commandments directly from Hashem rather than through an intermediary, and we asked for that, and we got that. After two of the ten, we couldn't handle it anymore, and we asked that Hashem speak to Moshe, and then Moshe tell us. This second part, unclear whether this was a result of us saying that we can't hear it anymore directly from Hashem, or this was already planned in the first place. The second part here is that Moshe is going to go up to the mountain by himself, and be there for 40 days and 40 nights, receive the tablets and the rest of the Torah. It's not clear which way to go on that, whether that would have happened anyway, or whether that's a result of us not wanting to hear the whole thing from Hashem because we couldn't handle it anymore. Whatever it is, it's definitely a second part, which means Moshe went up the mountain with Aharon, with Nadav and Avihu, with the 70 elders. And remember, we learned before that the 70 elders were able to go a certain distance. Nadav and Avihu, Aaron's sons, were able to go further. Aaron was able to go further than them. Moshe was able to go the furthest. And they were all on the mountain during the Ten Commandments, during the Aseret HaDibros, with all the revelation and all the miracles that took place during that incredible time. When that was over, evidently Moshe came down the mountain. They all came down the mountain. And then Hashem says to Moshe, okay, now you come back upstairs. And this time you're by yourself. No one else. In fact, Aaron, who was the one who was furthest up the mountain besides you, besides Moshe, he's going to stay in the camp. And along with Hur, who is Moshe and Aaron's nephew, Miriam's son, those two will handle any grievances that come up. That appointment that Moshe has given to Hur is going to cost Hur his life, because he is going to try to handle the grievance of the golden calf, and that's going to get him killed. So Moshe now is going to go up by himself. And he's going to...
Shiva Sefer Tammuz, he's going by himself?
No. Right after the Aseret HaDibros.
Okay.
He's going to come down on Shiva Sefer Tammuz.
Okay.
So he's going to go up by himself, and he's going to be there for 40 days and 40 nights. And the purpose of this is to get more than the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments were said orally on the 6th of Sivan. Now they're going to be committed to a stone tablet, or two stone tablets. And in addition, Hashem is going to tell Moshe the rest of the Torah, orally. There's not going to be any scroll that Moshe is going to come down with. He's only going to come down the mountain with two tablets, upon which will be chiseled the Ten Commandments, which they already heard. So this second ascent of Moshe to the mountain, and as we know, it's not really a second one. He's been up and down the mountain many times since they got to Har Sinai. But this second part of the receiving of the Torah, of Kabbalah HaTorah, is going to be to take the Ten Commandments that they heard orally and commit it to stone, and also to be given the rest of God's commandments, the rest of the Torah, which Moshe will have orally, which he will then transmit to the Jewish people when he descends the mountain. Yeah.
Would that be the Torah up to that point in time, or the whole?
That was already written down.
Oh.
That was already written down by Moshe on the fifth day of Sivan.
So it would be the whole.
Well, it wouldn't be the stories that happened. The stories haven't happened yet, but it'll be all of the laws,
the commandments.
Yes, the oral Torah as well. It'll be everything. How much of that would have been committed to a scroll eventually? I don't know, because we don't know what would have happened. Because in the end, the tablets are broken, mm-hmm. and Moshe has to go up again. So what would have been the system had the Jews not worshipped the golden calf is a good question. Either way, let's understand what actually happened. Moshe went up for the stone tablets. He received them, came down the mountain, he broke them, then he went back up the mountain, begged forgiveness from the Jewish people, came back down, carved out new stones, went back up a third time, and received the second set of tablets, came down the mountain on Yom Kippur, and then, at the end of the 40 years in the desert, Moshe wrote the entire Torah on scrolls and gave it to the people before he died. So, would that have happened anyway? Meaning, would there have been scrolls besides the tablets had we only had the first set of tablets and not worshipped the golden calf? I don't know. Mm-hmm. Had there been a need for Moshe to go up for 40 days, if we wouldn't have said, Hashem, we can't handle this. Moshe, you hear the rest for us? I don't know. As it is, we really end up with essentially three or four, depends on how you count it, parts of the giving of the Torah. We have the sixth day of Sivan, which is the oral 10 commandments. Then we have the first set of 40 days where Moshe gets the first set of tablets, which get broken. We have the third set of 40 days, because the middle one was to beg forgiveness. We have the third set of 40 days where Moshe goes up and gets the second set of tablets. But then, throughout the next 39 years, we hear more of what is commanded. And at the end of the 40 years, we are given the scroll. Today, we don't have the tablets. We don't have the broken ones. We don't have the whole ones. They are hidden away somewhere. We certainly don't have the oral Ten Commandments from Hashem. That was a one-time deal. The only thing we have left is that last piece, which are the scrolls that Moshe wrote. And that's our scrolls that we have. Are our scrolls exactly the same thing that Moshe gave? No. They are phonetically exactly the same thing as Moshe gave, which means that anything that you can hear is exactly as Moshe commanded it, as Moshe wrote it. That is the ingenious commandment that we have of reading from the Torah every Shabbos. Because the Torah is read from every Shabbos, and there is a rule that if the reader makes a mistake, what are you supposed to do? It doesn't say correct him.
Repeat it.
It doesn't say repeat it.
Yell?
It says yell at him. Go Rabin Bo. We yell at him. Can you imagine? It's a law in the Shulchan Aruch that if the reader reads and makes a mistake, you're supposed to yell at him in public.
Embarrass him.
The reason why that rule is there is not because he made a mistake. It's not to chastise him. It's in order to ensure the integrity of the Torah. By doing that, you can never have a phonetic mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you could have a mistake in whether the word has a vav in it or not, because a vav you don't hear when you say it. You could have the word written with a vav, without a vav, with a yud, without a yud, with a hey, without a hey. There's certain words that you can have these, and therefore we are not confident that our Sifrei Torah are 100% accurate when it comes to those types of letters. But phonetically, we're confident we have the right Torah. So that's all we have left from the whole process of the giving of the Torah. So it's interesting that when Moshe goes up for the Ten Commandments, he has other people with him on the mountain. Aaron, Nadav and Avihu, and the 70 elders. But when he goes the second time, which is the next day, or maybe even the same day, and he goes up to be there for 40 days and 40 nights, then he goes by himself. So now let's read carefully what happened over here. Let's look at it again. Looking back at Pasuk Yud Beis, verse 12. First of all, how are we supposed to understand these words? Hashem said to Moshe, come up to me to the mountain and be there. Mm-hmm. What does that mean, and be there? Obviously, if you're up on the mountain, you're there. What does that mean, be there? Vayei Sham, and be there.
This translation says, and remain there.
Okay, and remain there. So what is that coming to? What is that coming to? Yeah. What is he not supposed to do? What would he have thought that he's supposed to come up the mountain and then run away from the mountain?
Or go to sleep? Maybe go down and tell the children of Israel something.
Be totally focused.
Okay. So there certainly is an implication here of being. I would say a different word than focused. You're right. I have the same. I wouldn't say focused. I would say of being embedded or entrenched. Of you're there. You're not visiting. You're not here for
distracted.
A short. Not distracted. You are here. There's a certain permanence, and be there. Now he's not going to be there forever. He's only going to be there 40 days and 40 nights. So, what is the intent of be there? Be there sounds like forever. And be there.
Well, he didn't know even at the time that it would only be 40 days and 40 nights.
Okay, that's true. That's true.
He had no idea how long this was going to be.
Okay. When Moshe went up to the mountain for these 40 days and 40 nights, the Gemara tells us, I mean, actually, he himself says it later on in Sefer Devarim. Moshe tells us he neither ate nor drank.
Mm-hmm.
He literally became like an angel.
Like an angel.
Now, he still had a physical body, but his spiritual soul so enveloped his physical body that there was no need to nourish the physical body anymore. The physical body was not normally... We need to nourish our physical bodies and care for our physical bodies, and it's a mitzvah to do so.
Mm-hmm.
This is the physical body is the is the home, so to speak, of the soul in this lifetime. It is also the means through which we do the mitzvahs. You can't do a mitzvah with only the soul. You need a body with which to perform the mitzvahs. Moshe, during those 40 days and 40 nights, he had a body. But the body was not, it was completely and totally subsumed by the soul. And there was no need to nourish it. And so Moshe was in a totally different state than what we are familiar with. He's there on the mountain. And there is a permanence of being there. Now you can also say the permanence of Moshe being there means even after he came down the mountain, in a certain way he's still there. Moshe never really leaves that position of being the transmitter of the Torah. Even after he comes down the mountain, Hashem still speaks through him to transmit the Torah. In which case, the Sinaic experience never leaves Moshe. Or Moshe never leaves the Sinaic experience. He's always there.
Was that when he comes down, his face is glowing as a cover?
Yeah, yeah.
And then he no longer was with his wife Tzipor because he was completely a different level of his existence.
Right.
Totally
rough. Right. And it, to a certain extent, he is no longer a regular physical human being.
Right.
Now, he has a physical body, but in some respect, he is angelic in nature right now. That appears to be what happens. And Hashem says, I'll give you the stone tablets and the Torah and the mitzvah that I wrote to teach them. Now, it is worthwhile thinking about why there's a need for a stone tablet. We know the expression, it's not engraved in stone. Right? This was engraved in stone.
Mm-hmm.
So when we say it's not engraved in stone, what do we mean to say?
Not permanent.
It's not permanent. When you engrave something in stone, it's permanent. There's a permanence to it. Now, we all know that, was it permanent?
No.
No, it got broken. So it wasn't permanent. But there is a permanence to it. It's the most, nothing physical is permanent. Nothing in this world is permanent. The nature of this world is that it's constantly changing. And the nature of this world is that nothing endures. Spiritual things endure. The most enduring thing that we have in this world is something like stone. Stone is very powerful and it endures. So when you engrave something in stone, it does endure unless something is done to deliberately break it, which is what Moshe did. So there is this, Hashem is saying to Moshe, the Ten Commandments are going to be engraved in stone. There's going to be a permanence to those Ten Commandments. Then it says, then Moshe got up and Yehoshua, his attendant. Now, what is Yehoshua getting up to for? This was only supposed to be Moshe. So where's Yehoshua going? And then it says that Moshe went up to the mountain. Now, Yehoshua did not go up the mountain. He couldn't.
He stayed at the mountain.
Okay, so you have the encampment of the Jews, which is not at the foot of the mountain. You have the mountain, and then you have the encampment of the Jews a little distance away from the mountain. When they went to get the Torah, the Jews came to the mountain. Now the Jews have gone back to their camp. Moshe now goes back to the mountain along with Yehoshua's attendant. Yehoshua pitches his tent at the very bottom of the mountain and remains there when Moshe goes up. And Yehoshua remains there for 40 days and 40 nights. And when Moshe comes down the mountain, the first person he meets is Yehoshua. And as we will see when we get to Kisisa, Yehoshua doesn't know anything about the golden calf because he's not there. It is only after Moshe approaches the camp, Yehoshua is with him, and they witness the golden calf. Which means that it is incorrect to say that Moshe is the only member of the Jewish people who did not worship or did not allow the golden calf to be worshipped. Yehoshua as well neither worshipped nor allowed the golden calf to be worshipped. See, the problem is everybody else was complicit because they did not stop it. But Yehoshua wasn't there, just like Moshe wasn't there. Now, this is significant because in the end, although Yehoshua didn't do it, but he's lumped together with all the Jewish people. So Yehoshua accompanies his Rebbe till they get to the foot of the mountain, and then Moshe goes up. Now before Moshe leaves, he says to them, he says to who? He says to the elders. Who are these elders? We just mentioned these elders. These elders are the ones who are with him on the mountain. So he says to the elders, stay here, wait for us here, until we return. And he says to them, behold, Aaron and Hur are with you. Whoever has a grievance should approach them. Okay. So let's think about this. We just had the giving of the Ten Commandments, this giving of the Torah. And during the giving of the Torah, a clear hierarchy was established. Moshe is the top, then comes Aaron, then comes
Nadav
and Abihu, then comes the elders. Is Hur mentioned anywhere?
No.
No Hur. So there's a clear hierarchy, no Hur. No Yehoshua for that matter. Then, Moshe is going up now to be there 40 days and 40 nights. So, I would have expected him to say that Aaron is in charge. He's the second in command. Or, Aaron, Nadav, and Avihu are in charge. They are my seconds. Or, Aaron, Nadav, and Avihu, and the elders are in charge. But that's not what he says. He tells the elders that Aaron and Hur, they're going to take care of things while I'm gone. A little bit difficult to understand that. Now, has Hur been mentioned in the Torah before?
Yes.
Where?
When Moshe was overlooking the war with Amalek. Hur and Aaron.
Okay, so Aaron and Hur went with Moshe up the mountain. So the war with Amalek, which was led by Yehoshua, it was not led by Aaron, it was not led by Hur. Moshe, for whatever reason, felt he needed to appoint someone else in his stead. He appointed Yehoshua. He didn't appoint Nadav and Avihu. He didn't appoint the elders. He appointed Yehoshua. So Yehoshua wages the war against Amalek. Moshe goes up the mountain, and Aaron and Hur go with Moshe. The Gemara says to establish a Beis Din. There should be three people. So Aaron and Hur. So Hur is there with Aaron. No mention of Nadav and Avihu. So now, when it's time to get the Torah, maybe we should ask the question the other way around. How come the Torah doesn't say that Moshe goes till here, Aaron goes till here, Hur goes till here?
Right.
Right? Hur's already been established as Moshe's, we'll call him the third in command. There's Moshe, there's Aaron, and there's Hur. We already know that from the war with Amalek. Yet over here, no mention of Hur for the getting of the Torah. Instead, you have Nadav and Avihu and the elders. But then, when Moshe's gone and he needs to appoint people in his stead while he's out, while he's not there, now Hur is back in the picture. Aaron is a constant. But Hur moves in and out. Nadav and Avihu move in and out. So, how's that to be understood? Apparently, Hur has a particular role to play. That role includes going up with Moshe on the mountain for Amalek. It includes being a fill-in for Moshe with Aaron when Moshe is not there. But it does not include going up the mountain partially for the giving of the Torah. Nadav and Avihu and the elders are the opposite. They're not there for the war with Amalek. They're not there as seconds when Moshe is not there. But they are on the mountain when the Torah is being given.
Okay.
So it appears that in terms of the transmission of the Torah, this is critical, in terms of the transmission of the Torah, of course Moshe is the transmitter of the Torah through him. There is a second, that's Aaron. There's a third, that's Nadav and Avihu. There's a fourth. That's the elders. When Nadav and Avihu will eventually be killed, we are going to lose transmitters of the Torah. But in terms of leadership, there's Moshe, who is the leader. There's Aaron, who is a leader along with Moshe. Mm-hmm. And there's Hur. Now, none of them are going to lead when we get to Israel. Yehoshua is going to be the one to lead when we get to Israel. He's going to succeed Moshe. But during Moshe's lifetime, Yehoshua is not Moshe's backup. Now, this is a fascinating thing. We usually think of the successor is also the backup when the person in charge isn't available. But that's not the way Hashem worked it. The successor, he's just that he did lead the war with Amalek, but he's not an acting leader.
Yeah.
He's a student.
Yeah.
That's what he is. He is the epitome of what a student should be. Staying with his Rebbe all the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's why he can't be the backup to Moshe.
Because
when Moshe's not there, neither is Yehoshua.
Right.
Because he has to be with his Rebbe. He's not leaving his Rebbe's side. On the mountain, he had to. So he just went to the bottom of the mountain. But he can't be Moshe's backup. So instead, the backups to Moshe are the next best current leaders, not the successor. Who are the next best current leaders? Aaron and Hur. But even though Hur is a candidate to be a current leader, he's not in the top 74 of the transmitters of the Torah. And so too the other way around. Even though Nadav and Avihu are in the top 4 of the transmitters of the Torah, but they're not in the top 3 of the leaders.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting thing. Aaron and Moshe is both the top leader and the top transmitter of the Torah. Aaron is the second in command leader and also the second in transmitting of the Torah. There the two things come together. But after that, it diverges.
Mm-hmm.
Which is an interesting observation. Interesting point. This is critical to us because Hur is going to be killed. None of you are going to be killed. That means the leader following Aaron and the transmitters following Aaron are going to be lost.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to have them.
Yeah.
The Zekinim will eventually also be lost.
Mm-hmm.
So all those Moshe and Aaron remain the constants and they're there till the end of the 40 years. But we're going to lose these other ones. But it's an interesting study to understand them where they belong. So this is something which we're going to have to discuss when Hur does try to stop the worship of the golden calf and he's killed. So we lost a leader of the Jewish people. What's fascinating is that Hur has a grandson.
Bezalel.
Bezalel ben Uri ben Hur. Bezalel is the grandson of Hur. Bezalel is the one who builds the Mishkan.
That's right.
And he's the grandson of Hur. So that quality that Hur has finds expression in Bezalel, who will construct the Mishkan, which will ultimately be the way that we are able to extricate ourselves from the sin of the golden calf.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's going to come full circle. So the golden calf results in the murder of Hur and the loss of Hur, but it's his own grandson who restores or gives us the vehicle through which we can restore ourselves with Hashem. So when we talk about leadership, we're going to have to discuss, and this is not going to be for tonight, the different aspects of leadership. Because Aaron and Hur are not just a second in command, a third in command. They bring to the table certain aspects of leadership. And they end up complementing Moshe. Moshe, of course, is the greatest leader and is the best leader. Aaron and Hur each have something to offer. Aaron, of course, being the Kohen, we can always look in that direction to figure out Aaron's strength and what he's bringing to the table that Moshe does not bring to the table. What is Hur bringing to the table? So for Hur, since we know very little about him, we're going to have to look to his grandson, Bezalel, and to his mother,
yes.
Miriam. Chor being Miriam's son. So that's, we're going to figure out that third branch of the leadership in looking at where Chor came from and who came from Chor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be our way of, that's going to be our window into understanding this third part of leadership. So we have to, this is something for the future to be aware of. So this sets the stage then, really, for the golden calf, as we'll see later. Then it says that Moshe went up, and now we talk only about Moshe. Starting from Pasuk Tesvav, from 15 to the end, it's all about Moshe. No mention of Yoshua anymore, no mention of anybody else, it's just Moshe. Moshe and God's presence, and the mountain. So Moshe goes up, and a cloud covers the mountain, and the presence of Hashem dwells on the mountain, and the cloud covers it for 6 days, and then he calls to Moshe on the seventh day, and Moshe enters the cloud. And the appearance of God's honor was like a consuming fire on top of the mountain to the eyes of the Jews. Moshe came into the mountain, and he went up the mountain. He came into the cloud, he went up the mountain, and he was there on the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights. We've talked about the number 40 before, 40 being the number of creation. That's the amount of time it takes for a fetus to be formed after conception, 40 days, which has been corroborated more recently. It has been corroborated that's about when there is a certain type of formation of the fetus. And that's why with the Mabul, with the flood, the rain came down 40 days and 40 nights because it was reversing creation. And here, the Torah is a creative process. There is a creation going on over here. There's an embryonic stage that's happening with the Torah being given to the Jewish people through Moshe going up the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights. Yeah?
Before we get to the 40 days and 40 nights, though, we have these 7 days.
So there's a difference of opinion over here. One opinion is that this 6 days and seventh day is a repeat of the Ten Commandments. The Torah is just going back and saying that there were 6 days that they were there at the mountain, and then finally on the seventh day is when this all started, when Moshe goes up for 40 days. But the other opinion is that these sixth and then seventh day are the first 7 days of those 40 days. That Moshe wasn't actually inside that cloud for 40 days. He was actually in there for 33 or 34 days.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it is from here that we derive, or at least some derive in the Gemara, that when someone is entering the Machane Shechina, someone is entering the presence of God, you need 7 days in preparation. Where do we find that?
The Kohen Gadol
on
Yom Kippur.
That 7 days before Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol is separated from everybody, brought not into the Beis HaMikdash, but right on the periphery of the Beis HaMikdash, where he purifies himself for 7 days. And this is derived from here, that before entering God's presence, there it is required a week-long preparatory process. And it's derived from here. There's one other time that this is done, which is in the process of a para aduma, of a red heifer, that not in sprinkling the ashes once you have the ashes, but in preparing a new para aduma is slaughtered and the whole thing, all the ceremony takes place. There's a 7 day separation process prior to that. Yeah.
So why don't we hear that before, when Moshe first went up, in 7 day separation?
Well, there was a preparation of 6 days when the Jews were at the foot of the mountain. But I think because that wasn't considered to be the same as this, this is going to be... Their emotion was on the mountain, and the mountain was, you know, behaving in an unbelievably wild way. But all of us had to separate for 3 days. But this was going to be Moshe entering like an angelic state, a totally different type of existence. And that required a 7 day preparation. So here we now are going to if we're going to go chronologically, the next thing that would be discussed is going to be the golden calf. But we are now going to have a digression, which is going to take quite a while, with the Mishkan. Teruma and Tetzaveh and the first part of Kisisa are all going to be about the Mishkan. And then we'll get back to the storyline, so to speak, with the golden calf, and we get to the middle of Kisisa. Of course, we have to understand why the Torah puts all of this over here. Yeah.
Before we leave this, is the description of the mountain as a consuming fire a reference in a way back to the burning bush?
Yes.
Know, which was a,
yes.
And I was wondering the same thing when Hashem says to Moshe, the Yesham, because that looks a lot like Hashem's name that he gave to Moshe at the
interesting
Bush,
interesting
know? So we have these two allusions
interesting. Well, the fact that it's a consuming fire is definitely in contrast to the burning bush, which was a fire
that did not consume.
And this is a fire that does consume. It's a consuming fire.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.